and welcome to episode 37 of Spellcast. I'm your host, Courtney, and this is my co-host, Andrielle.
Greetings, friends. It's lovely to be back. It feels like a lot longer since last we did this, but I mean, we've been putting things out every week.
Yes, I think it's because when we were with Kate, we had recorded them so far ahead of time that we had a longer stretch of time between recordings.
This is fair. So tonight we will be discussing some history of witchcraft, magic, the occult, you know, insert any magical words here. You know, in studying our history, we must also be aware, especially now in honor of, you know, the remembrance of those lost during the Salem witch trials, it makes sense to look at the darker sides of history that affected us in a negative way. We are going to be, well, Courtney will be reading a small excerpt from Malleus Maleficarum, the wonderfully written book that, you know, was basically the focal point that people used to determine who was a witch. Spoiler alert, it's a pile of shite. It's absolutely god-awful trite. Yeah. And we will get to it. But we must study the history. We must study this in all facets so we can combat anyone who may use antiquity in a way to try to cause divide, harm, indifference, sexism, racism. You get the picture.
Yes. This was the book that people would follow like a Bible to accuse women and men, but mainly women, of witchcraft. And before we get into some of our excerpts from Malleus Maleficarum, I'm just going to go over a brief review of the Salem witch trials just to kind of get context and put us back in that time. So, the infamous Salem witch trials began during the spring of 1692 after a group of young girls in Salem Village, Massachusetts, claimed to be possessed by the devil and accused several local women of witchcraft. As a wave of hysteria spread throughout colonial Massachusetts, a special court convened in Salem to hear the cases. The first convicted witch, Bridget Bishop, was hanged that June. 18 others followed Bishop to Salem's Gallows Hill, while some 150 more men, women, and children were accused over the next several months. By September 1692, the hysteria had begun to abate, and public opinion turned against the trials. Though the Massachusetts General Court later annulled guilty verdicts against accused witches and granted indemnities to their families, bitterness lingered in the community, and the painful legacy of the Salem witch trials would endure for centuries. So, with the Salem witch trials and all of the pain and suffering that they caused, we remember that. We remember that loss. We remember that suffering. And March 1st was, I believe, the 325th anniversary. So this is springtime when the Salem witch trials began, and they wouldn't end until the fall. So
I suppose one could call it the darkest summer in occult history.
I would say so. And, you know, us living in America, we're told a lot of the Salem witch trials. In fact, when I did student teaching, I even taught a lesson on them. But even people outside of America have heard of the Salem witch trials. It's so famous. It spread across oceans and seas, and it is one of the more infamous trials throughout history. So without further ado, we shall get to an excerpt of the Malleus Maleficarum.
Excerpt.
Sorry. Didn't enunciate properly. Now I'm going to read to you the beginning of the book, a little introduction, just to give you an idea of who it was written by and when and kind of what to expect. And as Andrielle said, it's kind of a bunch of shit. So we apologize in advance, disclaimer, for any anger, hurt feelings, or sadness that is caused by this. That is definitely not our intention, but through all those feelings, we shall learn and grow better.
It is absolute trite. It is pseudo-morality and pseudo-intellectualism disguised as
righteousness.
Right? Yes, righteousness. Pretty much all negative aspects of humanity funneled into the most disgusting form of prejudice I've had the displeasure of feasting my eyes upon.
Yes. When we did a trial run and I read some things to Andreel, I was actually flattered with how upset he got, because I think he got just as upset, if not more, than any woman would hearing this directed at them.
I wouldn't wipe my ass with this thing. But we must study it. We must study how people are. We must, you know, because you never know when this kind of stuff can come about. Who knows? Mm. People can rise up. So.
Yes, and we don't need another witch trials, please. Now, a little bit of history on how I came to this book. We were at Beltane last year?
It was last year.
Okay. Sorry, with Italy and stuff, sometimes time gets mixed up for me. But so we were at Beltane last year out west on Long Island, and I met this one woman who I don't know if she quite identified as a witch, but she was there and definitely interested in spirituality nonetheless. And she gave me a really great deal. It was a whole stack of books for like $30. So obviously couldn't pass that up. There's some spell books in there, some general knowledge, and also the Malleus Maleficarum. Now, I have to say, I was very intrigued by all the other books, but when she mentioned that this one was in there, I just knew I had to have it. Because, again, this is a huge part of a witch's history, honestly. And I feel very lucky to have a copy of this. It's old. This copy is from... Oh, wow. On the back, it only says the prices for the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. So it must have been published there. Where's the... Oh, if you wouldn't mind holding the mic for a second. Yes. I want to look for the publisher page. Because I didn't look. It was translated... Let's see. Oh, here we go. This edition was first published by John Rodker in 1928, and this Arrow edition was published in 1971. So, quite the old version.
It goes back further. Yes. These pages are about as rusty as anything.
Yes, they're very worn and old-looking. Now, a brief introduction. The most famous of all books about witchcraft, Malleus Maleficarum, was written in 1486 by two Dominican monks. At once, and for the next three centuries, it became the indispensable handbook and ultimate authority for the Inquisition, for every judge, magistrate, and priest, Catholic and Protestant, in the struggle against witchcraft in Europe. It covered the power and the practices of witches, their relationship with the devil, their dedication and setting up and conduct of courts to try them, the use of torture, methods of punishment. The Inquisition, the burnings, the torture, mental and physical, of the crusade against witchcraft. These are notorious. And behind every bloodstained act lay this book, at once justification and instruction manual. For any understanding of the history and nature of witchcraft and Satanism, Malleus Maleficarum is the important source, the original source.
Not even that introduction is a pile of garbage. It's absolutely amazing, friends, that you can hold in your hands a piece of fabricated rhetoric that has caused the death of so many. It's, truth be told, it's an interesting feeling, to say the very least. The most surreal disgust I think I've ever had. I can't say pleasure or displeasure, because from a historian perspective, I am certainly interested, because this is how we learn. To say that we cannot learn something from even the most disgusting and contemptible individuals, you know, would be foolish. But
yes, the historian in me is also excited, not for the suffering part, but for the part that this played in history.
Well, you know, it's a fine thing. You know, it's an interesting thing, my friends. There's nothing more interesting than when somebody says, the book is real because the book says it's real. Like the same
book.
That's
a great justification.
Like, it's awesome. Like, that's, ugh.
Good work there, buddy. Ugh. It's almost like signing your own contract or something and being like, I allow myself to do this. It's like, wait, that's not how that works.
Wait, so Ron Swanson from,
exactly.
From Parks and Recreation. I can do whatever I want.
I can do whatever I want, signed me.
I don't know. I mean, I feel as though like...
But his was funny, at least.
Yeah, he's a better person.
So, I'll be reading from the first part, treating of the three necessary concomitants of witchcraft, which are the devil, a witch, and the permission of Almighty God. Now we're going to question 6. Concerning witches who copulate with devils, why is it that women are chiefly addicted to evil superstitions? So, Joyous. Wouldn't mind holding the microphone, thank you. I just don't want to hurt the book. And I feel like if I grip this hard, it's going to rip it. Yeah, like well, that.
The words must know that we're spell users.
Oof. Yeah, because it keeps like bending under my touch, and I don't really want to hurt this book anymore. Okay, so why superstition is chiefly found in women? I don't know. Why don't you tell me? Sorry. Commentary already.
Already, you know, starting off from a place of, you know, great intellectual integrity.
Yeah, clearly. Okay. As for the first question, why a greater number of witches is found in the fragile feminine sex than among men? It is indeed a fact that it were idle to contradict, since it is accredited by actual experience, apart from the verbal testimony of credible witnesses. And without in any way detracting from a sex in which God has always taken great glory, that his might should be spread abroad. Let us say that various men have assigned various reasons for this fact, which nevertheless agree in principle. Wherefore it is good for the admonition of women to speak of this matter, and it is often proved by experience that they are eager to hear it, so long as it is set forth with discretion. For some learned men propound this reason, that there are 3 things in nature, the tongue, the ecclesiastic, and a woman, which know no moderation in goodness or vice, and when they exceed the bounds of their condition, they reach the greatest heights and the lowest depths of goodness and vice. When they are governed by a good spirit, they are most excellent in virtue. But when they are governed by an evil spirit, they indulge the worst possible vices. This is clear in the case of the tongue, since by its ministry most of the kingdoms have been brought into the faith of Christ, and the Holy Ghost appeared over the apostles of Christ in tongues of fire. Other learned preachers also have had it that there were tongues of dogs licking the wounds and sores of the dying Lazarus. As it is said, with the tongues of dogs ye save your souls from the enemy. For this reason, Senior Dominic, the leader and father of the order of preachers, is represented in the figure of a barking dog with a lighted torch in his mouth, that even to this day he may be, by his barking, kept off heretic wolves from the flock of Christ's sheep.
Ugh.
Now, I feel like that's kind of a lot, so we might want to stop and talk about it and summarize it a little bit.
Well, sidebar, I mean, the fact that I just heard the part, you know, with the dog with the torch in its mouth, I mean, that just reminds me of Hecate.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that, too. Yeah, so interesting that that's a line.
Sitting on my altar right now.
Ugh, yeah, speak. That's totally not pleased with any of that. Now, it's interesting. They obviously went over women saying that they are either extremely good or extremely bad, depending on what possesses them. I would say that kind of speaks, I guess, to women being receptive, but in a less than flattering way.
Yes. Oh, of course. They're using the nature of the feminine aspect, which is, like you said, receptive, flexible, flowing, go with the flow, submissive, depending on the context. And they're using it in a way to justify that you are easily swayed by the, you know, by the ways of evil. You know, well, because, see, then that's the thing, like, right there, it's already saying something that's quite stupid. It's that, oh, you know, they're swayed by these forces, you know, as if magic is this single particular force. You know, men, oh, God, you know, when they use particular magic, you know, they're just, you know, you get, like, the saints, you get other entities that are doing things, and, you know, you get the scientists. But women didn't have any sort of status, so if they were blessed in any particular way, literally, that's the only thing that they could conform to in regards to an archetype in society.
Yes.
You know, because women couldn't be scientists, women couldn't be this, women couldn't be that, you know, so...
Yes, as thought by people. Just to clarify that you're not saying they couldn't, it's just in that society they weren't encouraged to.
At the time, friends, in case that is made obvious.
Yes, I just wanted to make sure that came across the right way. So, on to the next excerpt. So I am skipping around a little bit only because this kind of gets long-winded and whatever. We don't need to hear all of their bullshit. We'll just hear some of it.
We get the impression that these wonderful, ingenious writers like to hear themselves talk.
Yeah. So, now the wickedness of women is spoken of in Ecclesiastes the 25th. Sorry. There is no head above the head of a serpent, and there is no wrath above the wrath of a woman. I had rather dwell with a lion and a dragon than to keep house with a wicked woman.
Sidebar, spoken like a person who's never been laid, who lived on a particular monastery far away from the usage of his, you know, his external part, you know, outside of urination.
Yeah, I feel like whenever I hear such bitterness directed towards women, it's definitely men that just couldn't get a woman they wanted.
What, and not even that, or they have this idea about women. You're getting the extremism. It kind of reminds me of Reverend Josiah Reed from the Gun series.
Mm.
If those of you who've ever played that video game, Josiah Reed hated women. He thought that they were, you know, he addressed every woman as a wanton whore. You know, so it was very interesting, and you know, quite an interesting dark adaptation of particular types of preachers that existed post-Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Created many cults in that regard.
Yes. And among much which in that place proceeds and follows about a wicked woman, he concludes, all wickedness is but little to the wickedness of a woman. Wherefore, Senior John Chrysostom says on the text, it is not good to marry. What else is a woman but a foe to a friendship? Unescapable punishment, a necessary evil, a natural temptation, a desirable calamity, and a domestic danger, a delectable detriment, an evil of nature painted with fair colors. Therefore,
also, you know, nature, you know, because this color in nature, God, what a schmuck.
Therefore, if it be a sin to divorce her when she ought to be kept, it is indeed a necessary torture. For either we commit adultery by divorcing her, or we must endure daily strife.
It's quite interesting because those couple of sentences right there, it sounds as though the main part of, if they were channeling anything in the Bible in particular, that they might have been channeling the sides of Saul of Tarsus in regards to his views on women. You know, because, you know, Saul and other people that kind of listen to, you know, or St. Paul, for those of you who are ignorant of the Bible, not ignorant, not necessarily as an insult, just ignorant as in the absence of knowledge on the particular subject.
Yes. Sure they know us well enough that we're never insulting anybody. We're used different meanings of common words.
Yes. Ignorance is neither good or bad. Being an idiot is obviously bad. Being a fool is obviously, you know, it's not a good thing. You know, it's.
But no one can know everything.
Yes. So, that being said, Saul of Tarsus or St. Paul, very much thought that women should stay out of the affairs of God-fearing men. And also, one of the biggest things that interested me is that the whole wonderful phrase, to be the most holy would be to be unmarried and devote your life to God. But if you cannot resist temptation, 'tis better to marry than to burn. So marriage was, you know, if you had to succumb to the pleasures of the flesh, you know, but you're the most holy if you don't, essentially. And that was a lot of people's interpretation. I'm not saying one interpretation over the other. Saul of Tarsus had his reasonings. I, you know, honestly, he's the big reason why Catholicism and, you know, spread the way that it did.
Mm.
You know, a lot of Christian historians would say that it actually should be called Paulianity and not necessarily Christianity. you know, shout out to one of my first teachers on the subject, Nikki Shepherdson, if you ever actually hear this wonderful college professor from Rider University. Essentially, you know, it's quite interesting because his concept on being holy was, you know, that, you know, you wouldn't marry, you wouldn't reproduce, you wouldn't do any of these particular things. But if we had all listened to him, if everyone was to be truly holy as he, you know, would envision, then we would all be, you know, dead. We would be, I guess we would be in a hole. I guess that would count as holy.
Mm.
But I guess like H-O-L-E-Y.
Like, you know? In a hole hole.
You know? Anyway, I apologize.
Right. No, you're not interrupting. It's good. We can talk about this as much as we want. That's the whole point.
Nobody here can see my face. I'm seething. Oh, absolutely. I can't even listen to this without wanting to wipe my ass with it.
It's rough to talk about it. Cicero, in his second book of the Rhetoric, says that many lusts of men lead them into one sin, but the one lust of women leads them into all sins. For the root of all women's vices is avarice, or greed.
Which, we were talking about this a second ago. Holy crap. Yes, avarice, greed. Listen, friends, I'm not trying to sound any particular way, but in my experience, based on the ways that masculine and feminine energy work, both from an occult perspective and experience, knowing history, studying people both, you know, from a modern perspective and old ones, greed tends to be a sin that seems to ride the lines of masculinity a bit more than femininity.
And that's a vice, like, of course. That's the negative side of it. Not saying that that is what masculinity is, just that that's the negative side of it.
It could be a negative side of things. Mm-hmm. I tend to notice that that greed, in particular, when we talk about avarice, you know, that type of domination, that type of control, you know, like the British had great avarice, which is what caused the rebellion of the American Revolution. That usually seems to be incorporated with greed, incorporated with again, particular type of dominance, but taking things over, a warlike mentality. So if women, especially in that time, all things considered, their social status, it would come off to me that would be a learned trait from men. So, but, you know, what we reject, we shall become, and what we claim to hate is usually within ourselves.
Yes. Very well said.
So, stupid, 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 stupid.
In the less elegant
way.
Holy
goddamn fuck, this is stupid. I'm sorry. Okay, now we gotta put the explicit.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have to put an explicit warning. A woman either loves or hates. There is no third grade. And the tears of a woman are of deception, for they may spring from true grief, or they may be a snare. When a woman thinks alone, she thinks evil. But for good women, there is so much praise that we read that they have brought beatitude to men, and have saved nations, lands, and cities, as is clear in the case of Judith, Deborah, and Esther. See also 1 Corinthians 7. If a woman hath a husband that believeth not, and he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by a believing wife. And Ecclesiastes 26. Blessed is the man who has a virtuous wife, for the number of his days shall be doubled. And throughout that chapter, much high praise is spoken of the excellence of good women, as also is the last chapter of Proverbs concerning a virtuous woman. And all this is made clear also in the New Testament concerning women and virgins and other holy women who have led by faith, who have by faith led nations and kingdoms away from the worship of idols to the Christian religion. Anyone who looks at Vincent of Beauvais. Okay.
Oh, Beauvais.
Oh, Beauvais.
Remember
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Beau. V-A...
Learning French.
I-S is Vaughn.
We'll find marvelous things of the conversion of Hungary by the most Christian Gilia, and of the Franks of Clotilda, the wife of Clovis. Wherefore, in many... vituperations... It's hard words in here. that we read against women, the word woman is used to mean the lust of the flesh. As it is said, I have found a woman more bitter than death, and a good woman subject to carnal lust. So, it's interesting how it parries off of each other, that on one hand they're like, oh, women are these terrible, wicked, lustful creatures. But also, you know, sometimes they're cool and do great things, and it's like, but like, where are you? What are you thinking? How can you be both?
I mean, again, we must, at the same time, even though a lot of this sounds foolish and one-sided, we still have to consider the fact that this one was translated, we must know the context of the original people who wrote this in the context of their language and the inflection of language at the time, and the context of the people who translated it.
Yes, and I have to say, you can also notice in some of this that it says, oh, when it says, and he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. So it still sounds like the direction of that language is saying that the woman is doing him a favor. Kind of, is that right? Or like, basically, it's better for the woman to stay with him because she's helping the man. But it still seems like that language treats her as lesser and almost like she should do it to be a good person. But I feel like they wouldn't reciprocate the same thing with a man. You know, like, I feel like it's still very women's second language.
You'd probably be taken in a variety of ways.
Yeah, at least, you know, I'm sure, again, you can interpret this in a variety of ways. That just kind of struck me as the first one. Yeah, and also, of course, just a little interjection. When we're discussing this, if you guys are enjoying, isn't the right word, but finding it interesting, we would be happy to read more excerpts from this. I just found the Superstitions one to be the one that jumped out at me right now, and also a really good intro into reading excerpts from Malleus Maleficarum. And also, we'd love to hear your opinions, so you can reach out to us on any of our social media platforms if you'd like to discuss this. Yes, and speaking of that, we are going to go on to our commercial. So thanks, and we'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back. So, we are going to continue with our readings from Malleus Maleficarum. So if you wouldn't mind holding the microphone for me, please. Thank you. I'm trying to treat my old book very kindly. Okay. Now, just as a recap, which I'm sure you remember because the commercial break isn't that long, I'm talking about the superstitions and relevance to women and why it makes them susceptible to witchcraft. According to this, not my own beliefs. Not like I had to say that.
Wait, so, but see, and that's another thing. If women are so, right there, if women are so susceptible to, you know, and they're using the word witchcraft in a negative connotation. So if they're so sensitive to the negative, and women who are susceptible to that negative are able to influence the hearts of righteous men, doesn't that mean that the man is in fact infinitely weaker than the woman? But how can that be? Because she's so infinitely weaker than him. So, God almighty.
None of it makes any
sense.
This
circular talk is so asinine.
It really is. So, others again have propounded other reason why there are more superstitious women found than men. And the first is that they are more credulous. And since the chief aim of the devil, is to corrupt faith.
That is not my aim.
That made it sound so not scary at all.
It's like, That is not my aim. I speak.
The Bible.
This is the Bible. You dare question the great name of Jimmy? He's like, read the most important book in the world, the Bible. Like, this says the Bible. I'm never going to get over
for
that.
For you Aqua Teen
Aqua
fans.
Teen, yes. Now, oh my God, I'm absolutely in love with that show.
Sorry, I'm gonna try this again.
Chaotic garbage, but it's fantastic.
And the first is that they are more credulous, and since the chief aim of the devil is to corrupt faith, therefore he rather attacks them. See Ecclesiasticus the 19th.
Where are you reading this
word? Yeah, isn't it? It's Ecclesiastes, right?
Oh, Ecclesiasticus.
It is Ecclesiasticus.
Ah, yes.
It's different than Ecclesiastes. Latin. Yeah. The 19th. He that is quick to believe is light-minded and shall be diminished. The second reason is that women are naturally more impressionable and more ready to receive the influence of a disembodied spirit, and that when they use this quality, they are very good, but when they use it ill, they are very evil. The third reason is that they have slippery tongues and are unable to conceal from their fellow women those things which by evil arts they know. And
I'm sorry. I know it's being poetic, and I really don't mean to interrupt you, but like, it's a good thing. Again, this is poetry, slippery. It means it's another, you know, silvery or this, that, whatever. But I guess they don't say silvery because I don't want to give any value. but slippery. Like, aren't literally all tongues slippery? If you don't have a slippery tongue, don't you need, like, freaking biotine to moisten your mouth? God damn it.
The anger is real. It's basically just saying that they gossip. And, you know, it's like the Scold's Bridle. They used to have a torture device for women that supposedly gossip too much. Apparently, this was a big thorn in someone's side.
Look, I get it. It's just, Jesus. Like, out of context, that sounds so stupid.
I mean, most of this is not the best. And since they are weak, they find an easy and secret manner of vindicating themselves by witchcraft. See Ecclesiasticus, as quoted above. I had rather dwell with a lion and a dragon than to keep house with a wicked woman. All wickedness is but little to the wickedness of a woman. And to this may be added that, as they are very impressionable, they act accordingly.
Oh my, and that, again, another thing right there. Oh, they're so impressionable. Well, you know, okay, so people or things that are impressionable are often a victim of ignorance. Sometimes the ignorance is their own fault. But if you're the one in control of a particular society, you know, a society that's keeping women and certain other, you know, people of ethnic background down, their ignorance is the fault of the people who are in control. So if they're impressionable, it's because you're keeping them in a position to be impressionable.
Yes.
So, again, this is not hard psychology. This is not hard psychoanalytics.
I think with this, if any of them did realize that they are the reason that people are being kept down, I don't think they cared, and I don't think they wanted it to change. I think they were just using it as an excuse, and they probably reveled in the fact that they were keeping people down. I don't think it was a means to fix something. I think they just wanted to, you know, be able to be the ones in control of something. And I'm sure they thought that if they said it enough, ironically, people were impressionable enough to believe it. There are also others who bring forward yet and other reasons, of which preachers should be careful how they make use. For it is true that in the Old Testament, the scriptures have much that is evil to say about women, and this because of the first temptress Eve and her imitators. Yet afterwards, in the New Testament, we find a change of name, as from Evato Ave, and the whole sin of Eve.
Ave.
Oh my God. Anyway, Evato Ave. Sorry. And the whole sin of Eve taken away by the benediction of Mary.
They actually reference a little bit of that, I want to say, in Arthur Edward Waite's book of Black Magic, which is a fabulous read, friends.
Interesting.
And, I can thoroughly recommend it. But I will say, it is certainly well past advanced in regards to English. Mm. So you might want to read certain other books and work your way up to this, because this is definitely not a book where you're going to speed through the pages.
Yeah. Therefore, preachers should always say as much praise of them as possible, which makes no sense. I'm really confused. But because in these times, this perfidy is more often found in women than in men, as we learn by actual experience. If anyone is curious as to the reason, we may add to what has already been said the following, that since they are feebler both in mind and body, it is not surprising that they should come more under the spell of witchcraft.
They're just roundabout saying the same. They literally said the same thing for the entire page. It's like women are weak because women are weak because they're weak.
And they have feeble minds.
God almighty, the shot game in this.
It's pot calling the kettle black over here.
Holy crap. But again, that's just reaffirming my point. It's just like, you're saying that they are these things because you have created a society in which they do not have the opportunity to not be these things. So if a woman who pursues power is evil, and a woman who is ignorant and is just susceptible to these things are evil, what do you want from these people? I'm really surprised.
They don't actually want anything but to be in charge and be dominating over someone.
I really honestly...
Because ironically, they're the weak men.
Oh, deities, forgive me. I would have hold up pair of metal pliers over an open flame and twist someone's nutsack off with it.
We're definitely in explicit content territory. So, full warning, I don't think children listen to this, but by now you should know that your child shouldn't listen to this episode.
Shouldn't listen to this one. Lest we be on the same spectrum as this this Momo hoax.
Oh, we're not talking about that.
The chicken lady.
Yeah. Well, I already shared that in a Paranormal Chicks group because I'm a part of that.
She literally looks like the SpongeBob chicken meme.
And I hated seeing it. But I have to say thank you to the person that shared the chicken statue with me of what where she comes from, because now I'm less scared of her. But it's just so annoying. We're just, this is dumb. Anyway. Moving on from one disdain to the other. For as regards intellect or the understanding of spiritual things, they seem to be of a different nature from men, a fact which is vouched for by the logic of the authorities, backed by various examples from the scriptures. Terence says, women are intellectually like children. Sorry, I just needed
a break for that one. Again, you're treating them like that, so.
Yeah. And Lactantius, no woman understood philosophy except Tempest. And Proverbs 11, as it were describing a woman, says, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. Care to explain that one?
Okay, so I pick up a lot of things from that particular phrase.
Mm.
One, I'd look at it as, it's like, okay, that a woman is a beautiful charm, but if, you know, something stuck literally in a swine's snout, it would be very dangerous to just go after it,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, to take it at face value. You have to approach, if you really want to get the jewel, you have to take it out of the nonsense. You have to avoid getting bit or charged. You have to avoid some of the other things that come along with it. But you also had another way of looking at this particular phrase, which is very ambiguous. The smarter versions of that was a phrase from the Bible, was it not?
This one? Yeah, it's from Proverbs 11.
Proverbs is probably one of the better versions of, one of the better sections of that book. One of the better books in the Bible.
Right? And ironically, this wasn't the best excerpt from the best, section of the Bible.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, is that Proverbs especially, I mean, the whole book was meant to be ambiguous, and it was meant to be read by the most ambivalent of minds. Now, that being said, you know, there were some books that were written from a much more educated place than others, one could certainly say.
Mm.
I mean, you certainly can't compare. You really can't compare Deuteronomy to Proverbs.
No.
I'll take Proverbs any day of the week over that.
Yeah, lesser of two evils.
And Numbers was interesting. I definitely, you know, the letters to St. Paul's to the Romans and the Corinthians, and I don't know. It just shows that there are many different minds at work here, friends.
Yes.
You know, and there were different people. So to take, and a lot of people I noticed tend to look at the Bible as if it was, I get it, it's the ideas, again, like Word of God, but again, written by a bunch of different men, not one person, but they look at it as it was written by one person. That in and of itself is very dangerous to me, because if you're reading, let's just talk in regards to literature. If you're reading William Shakespeare from the lens of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who...
It's much different and not at all relatable.
Yes, it's not much later. Different periods, different perspectives on life. But if you look at all... And the unfortunate thing is that is how people look at most society.
Yes, you're right. It's almost like binding their books together and calling them the same thing.
The same thing. And one of them, like, they had many different convictions, many different things that they liked, disliked.
And that's all the apostles or even like other excerpts from the Bible. I mean, it's Old and New Testament. But yeah, putting that all in one book is like so just too much.
I mean, the apostles didn't, especially, I mean, the apostles lived separately after the canonical gospels. Well, yes, no, they
so they weren't even relatable in the sense that, yeah, they had their common thread of being apostles still, but I feel like after Jesus died, they all just kind of spread out.
Well, the actual original 12 disciples, the original apostles, I mean, like, they actually, if you really listen and you really pay attention to what's going on in those stories, they had their issues with Saul of Tarsus.
Mm.
Because at times, Saul of Tarsus, who was often referenced as a sickly, angry man at times, he spoke to the disciples as if he actually also knew Jesus of Nazareth personally in his mortal life, and he didn't.
Well,
and
he can be related to the people that wrote this book, where they think that they know everything, But, you know, it was a weak, sickly man who probably didn't feel very masculine that had to compensate for things.
Yes, and, it, you know, it's we have to take into account in many, many things. I mean, Saul of Tarsus, you know, he was a murderer. And then, you know, he was, you know, he was blessed enough to see the light of Yahweh and Jesus of Nazareth through the Holy Spirit. Now, it's, and again, I'm not putting down Saul of Tarsus, but we must take everything with a grain of salt, and some things are more admirable than others. Yes. I mean, all the apostles, they had their mistakes were the symbolism that I believe made the stories even better. But I digress.
Yes. I was going to say, too, with the quote, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman, which is without discretion. So what I was saying was, I kind of got it from that women were as worthless as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, because there's a jewel and that itself is worth something, but put in a swine's snout, I feel like people always talked of swines in a very degrading way. So I feel it was almost saying that a woman without discretion is useless or worthless or just not worth having around. Yeah. So that's what I got from it. But of course, share your opinions. Let us know. And the next text in. But the natural reason is that she is more carnal than a man, as is clear from her many carnal abominations.
Yes, carnal. Carnal from, you know, when compared to a man. Uh-huh. You know, that, you know, men that will literally blow up an entire, like, city of people because he can't sate his sexuality. Like, oh my God. I'm a man, folks. I'm a man. I have an incredibly insatiable appetite. But, you know, perhaps it's TMI for our viewers. But, like, let's cut the shit here, huh?
Well, I guess in a way to be relatable. But, again, men...
Well, female desires are very different than male desires.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I think that what you're trying to say is you can understand that men have a lot of desires, urges even, but that doesn't give you an excuse to be, like, a raging jerk.
Oh, look, all I'm saying is that in the worst sides of what we see portrayed by women, if their sexuality were to twist and turn something, unless they're influencing a kingdom, then that's a different type of variable. But if we're talking about certain things, you know, it's the death toll from a man's unsated sexuality is much larger historically and statistically than when compared to the female counterpart. Now, unless someone wishes to bring me actual statistics, if there are statistics on something like that.
Which is probably a hard thing to find. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the thing is, too, is, of course, again, just a reminder, we're definitely speaking in extremes here. Not to say that all men are like this or not at all in any way, shape or form, or all women are like that. It's just saying in the most ugly, twisted, like demented
in the worst sides of humanity.
Yes, for sure.
By now, if you're listening to this episode, if you take us 100% seriously on anything,
we're not very literal. In that sense, we just like to talk about philosophy and bring up different points. So definitely don't take anything personally. It's never what we mean. We don't ever mean to insult or hurt anyone. And sometimes you got to play devil's advocate. So also just a note on that as well. I know with myself, sometimes if I'm just naturally playing devil's advocate, I forget to do the disclaimer that I'm doing so. So we don't want it to come off like we believe these things. It's just for the sake of argument.
The only thing I believe is that this book sucks.
That we can all agree on.
This book, but I put you gotta read it.
And it should be noted that there was a defect in the formation of the first woman, since she was formed from a bent rib, that is, rib of the breast, which is bent, as it were, in contrary direction to a man.
And yes, contrary. You know, the poles, the balance, and the thing that Adam needed the most.
So the note on that, I would say, is that, yes, you're right. There's the polarity, but they're looking at polarity as a negative thing, not a way to complement each other.
Yeah, because they have to, because it's an extremist way of thinking. It's the idea of looking at things as either just good or just evil, nothing else in between, whereas most of life is very gray. That's why there was a misunderstanding of anything pagan.
Yes. And since through this defect, she is an imperfect animal, she always deceives. For Cato says, when a woman weeps, she weaves snares. And again, when a woman weeps, she labors to deceive a man. and this is shown by Samson's wife, who coaxed him to tell her the riddle he had propounded to the Philistines, and told them the answer, and so deceived him. And it is clear, in the case of the first woman, that she had little faith, for when the serpent asked why they did not eat of every tree in paradise, she answered, "Of every tree, lest perchance we die." Thereby, she showed that she doubted and had little faith in the word of God.
Can I, so in the reference to, so Samson, Delilah with Samson,
oh, yes.
That is from the biblical story of Samson and Delilah. For those of you who don't know, this wonderful story was first brought to me by one of my first piano teachers, Marianne McElroy, a lovely woman.
It's one of my favorite stories.
Graduate of Juilliard, amazing musician. Essentially, long story short, Samson, who was essentially Superman, you know, fought against the, you know, the Philistines. There was this mm-hmm. war going on. Now, what they don't want to say, oh, yes, yeah, Delilah. They're looking at this like Delilah. Delilah was an agent of the Philistines. You know, the Philistines who had a male leader. So she was influenced by, you know, once again, men. Male energy. Now, I'm not trying to, now this episode in particular, I'm not trying to fuel a lot of the rhetoric that surrounds man-hating and, you know, people taking things certainly too far in regards to politics nowadays. I'm going to be very clear about that. You know, I'm very much about a balance of the sexes and finding the sympathies in our differences. But in this particular context, there's so many things wrong with a lot of this. So that wasn't Delilah's particular, like her MO was to serve, again, the other men. So I guess serving man is only good if you're serving the right man that's in the particular story.
I think that
story.
Would be what they would say. Yeah.
So
you hit that right.
Yes. So Delilah, yeah. So long story short, she was incredibly beautiful and she got Samson to like her. And she was trying to figure out Samson's secret to his strength. Mm-hmm. And Samson kept telling her white lies to get her to drop the subject. But then, you know, it grew very intense. And the third time around, he had told her that the secret to his great power was his long hair. So she cut his hair in his sleep. And then he had lost his power. The Philistines had taken him. And they took him to what was essentially a coliseum. They burned his eyes.
Yeah,
they blinded him and brutalized him. And they kept him in the coliseum every day so the Philistines and the enemies of Samson could laugh at him. And there was this reference that Samson had trusted, you know, the woman more than God. There was a lot of extremes in this story. When in reality it was something, you know, there can be a lot of things taken in this.
And I also think that definitely shouldn't be taken in black and white. I mean, there's plenty of times that either gender is the evil or the antagonist in a story, but I don't think it's strictly because of the gender.
Yes. So it's such an interesting thing, and it depends on the perception of those who are reading and reciting it.
Mm-hmm.
In the end of the story of Samson, you know, Samson kept praying to God every day to give him his strength one more time just to free him. And Samson was chained to the Colosseum. So essentially, God had, you know, Yahweh had given him the strength back one more time, and Samson had pulled the entire Colosseum and crushed everyone in there to death, including himself. So Yahweh granted his wish in quite a devilish way.
Mm.
So, you know, these things work in mysterious ways. But to say that in Samson and Delilah, this was exclusively the fault of the feminine aspect, that in and of itself is the most disgusting perversion that I've ever heard in my life.
I agree.
Especially for anyone who knows the damn story.
Yes. Well, back in regards to Eve. Thereby she showed that she doubted and had little faith in the word of God. And all this is indicated by the etymology of the word, for femina comes from fe and minus, since she is ever weaker to hold and preserve the faith. And this as regards faith is of her very nature, although both by grace and nature, faith never failed in the Blessed Virgin, even at the time of Christ's passion, when it failed in all men. Therefore, a wicked woman is by her nature quicker to waver in her faith, and consequently quicker to abjure the faith, which is the root of witchcraft. So again, with that little bit of polarity, saying that women are weak, susceptible to witchcraft and evil, but at the same time, also randomly acknowledging the Blessed Virgin Mary and saying that she was stronger than all men in that instance. So I don't really know what they're kind of hoping to accomplish by injecting that in there.
Yeah, it just sounds, again, like the rhetoric of a person who abstained from all sexuality because of extremist thinking and used that as, you know, because that's the thing, is that that's one could argue that if they were repressing their own, if these writers were repressing their own sexuality, mm-hmm. that they needed to scapegoat women. They needed them to be all these evil things in order to reaffirm their own belief in their own sexual repression as this pseudo righteousness.
Yes, they do. And actually, in other parts of it, they do talk about a lot of famous women that they say like kingdoms have been overthrown by, like Helen of Troy, Jezebel. They talk about Cleopatra, the Queen of Egypt.
Yeah, you can't in and of itself say that women are these weak creatures while at the same time giving them the sole blame for destroying a kingdom. Like, pick one, man.
Oh my God. I just read something that literally equated women to a chimera.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. That one actually sounds accurate. Oh, wait.
Nice.
I do jest.
I know. Oh my gosh, sheesh. There's a lot in this book. That's not even the entire chapter on the superstitions that lead women to witchcraft and all of this other wonderfully wonderful stuff. Now, there's a little bit more in that section. Again, it kind of really just goes over more examples about how women are wicked and treacherous and all these things. The next section, which we will not go into just now, is an expansion on that, saying what sort of women are found to be above all others, superstitious and witches. So it sounds like they might start to get to a point somewhere.
We should revise the title of this book, Sexism in the
15th
ages.
Century.
Yeah.
And I am really sad because this book is very fragile because it's from the 70s and I have to treat this with care. And I noticed that there's a little bit of tearing in some pages, and it has been water damaged before I got it. So we'll be really careful with it, and not work it too much. Now, I think another interesting thing will be to talk about, more exact examples. So we'll kind of go through in the next episode. You know, I'll find some more sections that I think would be interesting to look at, and interesting to talk about and point out for you guys. So, let me know if you happen to know Malleus Maleficarum and you have an exact section you'd like us to go over, feel free to share it. If you found this really interesting and you would like to comment or become part of the discussion, please feel free to do so on all of our social medias. We have Twitter at SpellcastPod. There's Instagram, which is at WitchyPage. We have the Facebook private group, Spellcast Podcast, the Facebook page, Spellcast Podcast. And you can always email us, witchypage@gmail.com or andreelle@gmail.com if you'd like to talk to Andreelle in particular about something. And thank you guys so much for listening and for being so understanding and really getting where we come from. You know, we get into philosophical debates and those get heated, especially things that surround sexism and being just so, in the negative sense, ignorant. So there's your example of two different ways you can use that word.
Okay, so ignorance still has its innocence.
Yes. Oh,
but idiot, a fool, very different things.
Oh, they're foolish then. That would be a better word. So yes, we do appreciate that you guys, you know, are understanding, like I said, and you get where we're coming from. And, you know, thank you for being a part of this podcast, for listening to us. And we hope that you enjoyed this episode that was briefly on the Salem Witch Trials, but also on Malleus Maleficarum, the book that really was the Bible for the Inquisitors that really helped solidify people's opinions of witches and condemn them to be burned at the stake or otherwise tortured and killed. So if you'd like us to continue with this, if you liked our philosophical discussion, if you enjoyed it, let us know. Like I said, any of the social medias, you can give us a shout out or privately message us or email us if you like. And we really hope you enjoyed this episode. So I think that about wraps it up for now. What do you think?
I think that's a good place to end it.
All right. And this is going to be weird to put my tagline at the end of this episode, but remember, there's a little witch in all of us.
And the spirits live in the mirror.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.